Christian Fowler is on X at C Fowler BCM. He's a senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have a podcast released every single Tuesday at noon called the On the Bluff Podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, full length video version on YouTube. Christian, how's it going, brother?
Everything's wonderful, Gabe. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I can't complain. We have a big game coming up on Saturday. Yeah. I do know that for the Memphis Tigers.
I have heard.
Yeah. I want to start there because I'm curious. I see this line, this betting line. Does Vegas know something that we don't? It opened at 1.5. Florida State was favored by at home, 11 a.m. on Saturday. Now it's at 6.5. Does Vegas know something that we don't, or are they just adjusting it on the fly here?
It seems like it, because 1.5, we talked about it last night on the podcast. We both kind of expected it to move a little bit towards Florida State with the bye week and just how desperate they are for a win. But to move 5 points, and I think some places it's up to 7.5 already. So to see it move that much already is a little shocking, and it kind of does make you wonder, is there something going on that we don't know? I don't know. Maybe. It feels like it, at least.
Well, the only thing I could think of that could make it move without, you know, I mean, just the only thing that I think could make it move is a quarterback switch. But also, I did sort of think about it. We talked about it on the podcast. Is it just them finally realizing, Vegas finally realizing, well, Florida State has an extra week to prepare, and they're going to be angry. They're 0-2. This is their last real last-ditch effort to show that they have a little bit of power this year.
Outside of a quarterback change, that is, to me, the only thing that makes sense. And talking about concerns going into this game, the only two that I have are what you mentioned. Florida State's coming off a bye week, and they desperately need to win this game to salvage any kind of season. That's it. Outside of that, I don't have on-the-field concerns, really. The only one that I can point to is Memphis going to be ready at the time the ball kicks off? You know, is there going to be a little bit of shock factor? Not that they can't handle the moment, but just, you know, settling in, first road game of the season in a hostile environment, regardless of how bad the team has been so far. Just thinking about it, there's not an environment close to that this current iteration of the Memphis Tigers have played in. They're not used to that many people, that much noise, that much, you know, of a crowd factor. So those are the only things that concern me. If it's a neutral site game and Florida State had played last week, let's say they didn't play week zero, they just played week 1 and 2, like Memphis, and lost those two games to Georgia Tech and Boston College, then I wouldn't have any concern at all. But the extra week to prepare, even though they've looked so bad, if you give a coaching staff, especially a good coaching staff, I know it's been rough so far, but Mike Norvell is a good coach and he has a good staff. It's tough to be a team like that when they have 2 weeks to prepare for the same opponent, back against the wall. That is a hard deficit to go up against. Now, am I saying Memphis can't go in there, play great from the opening kick and win that game? Absolutely not. I believe they're fully 100% capable of winning that game. They have to be their best from the beginning. They can't fall into a hole. They can't let Florida State get into a neutral or positive game script where they're able to control the ball a little bit more. They need to force them into passing situations. If Florida State is going to win that game, make DJU have to make throws. That's the biggest thing. Don't let them get...
Or if Memphis is going to win that game, you mean? Or if you're going to win that game, if you're Memphis?
If you're going to win that game, if you're Memphis.
Yeah.
Yes, no, not for Florida State.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think DJU in third and long is great for Florida State.
No, it's terrible for Florida State. But, yes, that's what I'm saying. If Memphis is going to go to Tallahassee and win this game, they've got to force DJU to throw the ball on you know, obvious passing situations, third and long, second and long, getting behind the sticks.
And then also get after him, too. Blitz a little bit. I don't mind a little five-man, six-man pressure. That works against that guy. I saw it in the Boston College game. I saw it in the Georgia Tech game. Now, what is the formula offensively for Memphis? Because that's something that I think a lot of people struggle with, because the first two teams that handled Florida State were very physical, really good offensive lines. I'm not saying Memphis doesn't have it. I saw them against Troy. They look pretty damn good, and Mario Anderson Jr. definitely has a physicality about him, the way he runs. He runs angry. But they also had the quarterback run, which Memphis doesn't necessarily have. What's the formula, do you think, offensively for Memphis to get after this Florida State team?
Set the tone early physically, like you just said, with this offensive line, with Mario Anderson, get them back on their heels, and then really mix in the play-action passing game, the RPO, keep them guessing the entire game. I don't think this is one where it's like, okay, Memphis needs to double the time of possession. They need to really slow this game down and keep dynamic offense off the field. It's not that, because Florida State doesn't have that. It's, yes, you want to be physical. You want to keep them guessing. But I think you also definitely need to have chunk plays, explosive offensive plays in this game, because if you're able to build a 10-point lead or a 2-touchdown lead, yep, Florida State is probably not catching that.
And also, I think there's that thought in the back of all of our heads. I mean, if you get up by a couple of touchdowns, you may watch that team quit right in front of you.
Exactly. Especially early. Say in the first quarter and a half, if Memphis was up by 14, we could probably see that team quit. With what's happened so far this year, how difficult it's been, especially if DJU is, turning the ball over, making errant passes. So to me, that's it. Offensively, physical, I'm not even going to necessarily say control the clock, keep the other offense off the field. Just be physical, be able to have the threat of running the ball, and get your vertical passing game working. It doesn't all have to be underneath. It doesn't all have to be intermediate. You can get chunk plays, explosive plays in this game, and not have to worry about, oh my gosh, if we score quick, this other dynamic offense is going to go out there. That's just not the case with Florida State. And then defensively, you said bringing pressure. Look, if you bring blitzes on a good percentage of the plays in this game and you get beat once or twice, I am totally okay with that.
Right.
Because DJU is going to make more mistakes than he makes good plays if he's sped up, if he's moved off his mark, if he's got pressure in his face. So aggressiveness on both sides of the ball. Just go out there and leave it out there. Play, call the game exactly how you want to. Don't hold any punches. Go do everything you can to win this game.
Now, here's the real question. How much have the first two performances, and I think the run game in North Alabama we could leave out of this, but maybe we'll just talk about the Troy game and how they performed, because I thought it was workmanlike whole thing. But how much did that game go to making you think that they can go ahead and execute these keys to the game we just talked about against Florida State?
It gives me way more confidence, because after the North Alabama game, we were talking about after, Florida State lost to Georgia Tech, okay, Memphis is going to be able to control the line of scrimmage and run the ball.
Right.
And then they go out against North Alabama, and they could not run the ball against North Alabama. So as bad as Florida State had looked in that Georgia Tech game, it was like, okay, if Memphis can't run the ball in North Alabama, then there's no way they can run the ball on Florida State, no matter their deficiencies. But to see this week what they did on the ground, Mario Anderson, obviously, 17 carries, 125 yards. Greg DeRozier chipped in almost 60 yards. Brandon Thomas with two goal line touchdowns.
He might end up with, 15 carries for 15 yards and 15 touchdowns this year?
He just might. It is highly possible. But I feel much more confident than I did after the North Alabama game. And we talked about it last week. It was, is that going to be the outlier? Is that going to be the game where they really were just super vanilla and they were still gelling and getting their chemistry as an offensive line with so many new starters? Or was that what we were going to see the majority of the season, Memphis be stuck in neutral, not able to run the ball? And if we're just basing it off the Troy game, then week one looks more like an outlier. And that's a great thing going into this Florida State game, because if they can, like I've said multiple times, and I just think it's so important, keeping them guessing, not having to be one-dimensional offensively because you can't run the ball. If you keep them on their heels, you're physical with them, mix in the play-action game, mix in the RPO game, if you're running the ball effectively, I think Memphis wins this game. If they run the ball effectively, if they're able to get into second and shorts, third and shorts, yep, just have manageable down in distances, which will be more than likely an asset of the run game, I think they beat Florida State if they can run the ball.
Yeah. Now, one thing that is kind of strange about this matchup now, you know, since we what we thought going into the preseason and, well, really into the season, thought this would be a top 10 matchup. You're going on the road, free shot, blah, blah, blah. Memphis is more the ranked team than Florida State is at this point. Yep. Memphis at least got in the coaches' poll at 25. They're still, what, right around 30, I guess, in the AP, because Northern Illinois jumped up over everybody to get in at 25 after the Notre Dame win. But it is kind of strange to see, yeah, sure, Memphis isn't favored, but they're more the ranked team than Florida State is.
Yeah, and even though the circumstances have changed a lot, I would have really liked to see Ryan Silverfield and the staff call this game the same way that we thought they would coming into the season.
Right.
Nothing to lose. Go out there, let it all hang out. Play the game like that. Do not play to not lose.
Don't play tight. No reason to.
Yes, if they get conservative in this game, I will be extremely shocked if they win. They cannot be conservative. They cannot try to sit on the ball and control the clock the whole entire game. It doesn't need to be that. It needs to be called the same way offensively and defensively as if Florida State was a top 10 team that Memphis wasn't expected to beat. They need to go let it all hang out. They need to get creative with their blitz packages. They need to get creative on the offensive side of the ball. Just go play to win the game. Don't play to not lose the game.
I hear you. I absolutely hear you. And now I want to move on to this, and I don't want to spend too much time on it because it has been, I don't know, talked out to a certain degree. But Penny Hardaway, Memphis basketball, you had four coaches fired last week. Now you have the anonymous letter that has been acknowledged by the University of Memphis and sent into the NCAA that alleges a $30,000 payment to DeAndre Williams, $60,000 payment to Emmanuel Aycott, and the academic fraud that got Malcolm Dandridge in hot water last year at the end of the season. Then you had, I mean, we had on the Jeff Calkins show last Friday, new Memphis AD Ed Scott joined, sort of tried to shed some light. Penny talked to John Rothstein. It was a week of drama, a week of dysfunction last week for Memphis basketball.
Yeah, and the biggest thing to me, like you said, it's been talked about ad nauseum over the last week because it's been a massive story, a national story. But to me, more than anything, it just sucks for the fan base.
Yep.
Because it's been a roller coaster ride the last 6 years, regardless of how you look at it. There's been the great recruiting classes. There's been the down years where there's unexpected losses. There's been the tournament appearances and a tournament win and conference championship. There's been good and bad. But this is overwhelmingly negative. And the reason I think it sucks even more is because after the Malcolm Dandridge stuff, when last spring or last winter, whenever February, March, whenever that stuff came out, it has been extremely quiet since that point. Memphis, the staff went out, they landed some really solid transfer portal additions that fit the scheme very well. They got them in early, most of them in July. We felt way better about that than we have the last couple of years. Felt like, okay, this team should have chemistry. By the time they get to the floor, there was a little bit of coaching turnover, but you felt good about, you know, Rick Stansberry coming back, being the main assistant, Penny being able to hold on to his main assistant for a second season. You had to feel good about that. And it was just quiet. It was a pretty drama-free offseason for Memphis basketball after the allegations, after the academic allegations. And then 2 months before the season, you get four coaches fired. You get the anonymous letter. And it's like, oh, my gosh, there can't be a positive for this program without a negative shortly following it. And so for me, more than anything, it's just like I feel bad for the fan base because it's the right. Constant pendulum swing. It's the constant roller coaster, whatever other analogy you want to use. It's just back and forth, up and down all the time. It can't be steady, and that has to be frustrating for Memphis fans.
And I think there's a lot of people in the fan base that are exhausted just with the situation. But like I said this on the podcast last night, but the moves that were made, like even with the anonymous letter with the coaches being fired, it's not what was done, it's how it was done, right? It's the timing
right.
With which you fired all these coaches, and it's the fact that the University of Memphis not only sent the anonymous letter into the NCAA, but also released it to the media for everyone to see, which they didn't have to. Like, it's not what was done, it's how everything was done last week.
Yeah, and that seems to be a trend that we've seen. And I think the word that you use is the best. It's exhausting. It's nonstop. It is one thing after the other. And it's hard to... I would say it's probably hard to stay supportive of it all as a Memphis fan. Because
sure.
If it was... 10 positives in a row, and then you get a blip on the radar of a negative. That's one thing. That's what pretty much every program in the country deals with. It's not all going to be sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, and I
the
will
amount,
Go ahead. My bad. Apologies.
Yeah, but just the overall amount of negativity, and the way that I phrased it last night was just kind of a dark cloud that's hung around this program. It might not have always been in the spotlight. It might not have always been prevalent, but there was a lot of times when it showed up, and it's exhausting. That is, to me, the best word to use to describe it. It's absolutely exhausting.
And the thing is, I think this was a lot of Ed Scott coming in. I don't think it's any coincidence that he takes over the job 7 to 8 weeks ago. And now you have all these sweeping changes in the basketball program. I think there was definitely an acknowledgement from him that this is not how you need to run a high-level basketball program. I will give him, you know, some props here, because he came in, he recognized a problem that we have been seeing for quite a bit, actually, and he decided to do something about it. That's what it looks like from the outside.
Yeah, and if this leads to positive down the road, then great. But if it's just one and another, and it just keeps coming, then that's frustrating. But
right.
if this is him coming in and trying to right the ship and get things right behind the scenes, and it pans out, and it, you know, it's smooth sailing from here, then we can look back at this moment and say that was great. Glad that happened. Glad things got cleaned up, and it's been easy going from that point. But if it's a continuation, then it's, you know, something's got to happen. It can't continue to be one thing after the other. Eventually, it has to get on solid ground.
Yep, I hear you. Now, talking with Christian Fowler at C. Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator at Bluff City Media. I do have to give an applause real quick to your Cowboys. I'm talking to Mr. Cowboy right now. Good dub to start the year against the Browns. And also, good on the Joneses to get the damn Dak Prescott deal done. $60 million per, baby. It needed to happen. It looks like a lot of money, but hey, it is what it is. It's the market.
Yeah, it's what you got to do, and in 2 years, it'll be middle of the road. You know, not middle of the road, but
well,
middle of the top
hopefully.
10.
Yeah, hopefully middle of the road.
You know, it'll be middle of the top 10, bottom of the top 10 in a couple of years. That's just it's cyclical. That's how it works. That's how it was last time Dak got paid. He was either one or two, I believe, when he got paid last time. And right now, I think he's 9 or 10. Or before this deal was done, he was like 9 or 10. So it's just the cycle. It's how it goes. He's going to be the highest paid for a year at most, probably, and then you'll see more extensions. So it's part of it. It's what you got to do. To me, it's not a big deal. I'm glad it got done. It's wild that it took up until an hour before kickoff of week one for it to happen. But it did, and that's all that matters. He's under contract. CeeDee Lamb's under contract. CeeDee Lamb made it out of week one healthy, which is always a concern when a skilled player is not in training camp or in OTAs and misses all that. He made it out of week one healthy, so that was great. But it was the defense that shined in this one. They were incredible against Deshaun Watson, who I think a real conversation is starting to be had of if he is just completely cooked, and it looks like it. And I think it's partially he does not fit Kevin Stefanski's system whatsoever. And then the rest of it is probably, I don't know, just a mental thing. Just having gone through everything that he's done and everything that he's been, you know, alleged to do and all the drama that came with that, that's got to add up. So he looks terrible, but the defense was great. Linebacking core looked really good with the addition of Eric Kendricks. DeMarvion Overshown back in his second year after tearing his ACL as a rookie. DeMarcus Lawrence and Michael Parsons did their thing, did what they always do, and fifth-round rookie starting at corner for Deron Bland, Kalen Carson played really well also for the majority of the game. So at least in week one, it was a good time to be a Cowboys fan.
Now, there's a lot of storylines you follow in any week one of the NFL season, but one that I'm following really closely, quarterback play seems down across the league. There's two quarterbacks last week, or this week in week one, that threw for over 300 yards, Tua Tagovailoa and Matt Stafford. Then there was 17 starting quarterbacks who threw for under 200, including like all the rookie quarterbacks. All the rookie quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams only threw for 93 yards. Bo Nix looked really bad, even though I was writing his Hall of Fame speech a couple of weeks ago. But what is going on? Like, what do you think the big issue is early in this season with quarterback play around the league?
Yeah, I think it's a trend that we're going to continue to see. When you have less practices, less opportunities to get game-like reps, and I know a lot of teams have come out and said, well, we feel like the inter-squad practices with other teams have allowed us game-like atmospheres and have allowed us to sit our starting quarterbacks in the preseason. But the fact of the matter is that it's been sloppy. And this was the sloppiest year yet, at least in recent memory. Last year wasn't too much better. I think it was better, but not by much. And I think you don't see any of the stars play in the preseason anymore, which on the same token of that, I can't blame them. They've got to play 18 games plus playoffs if you make it now. Three more games is just more to add on. But we used to see starting quarterbacks play, you know, maybe a half or a couple of drives in the first three games and sit the last game. And it made quarterback play so much better because you got those live game reps. You were able to, you know, to see things and get into the groove and get into a feel, even if it wasn't, you know, a meaningful game that counted against the record. You just had more reps. You had more opportunities to get game reps, and they don't have that anymore. So unless something changes, unless teams start playing starting quarterbacks in the preseason again, which is not going to happen, then I think it is going to be, you know, week one and week two are probably going to be pretty sloppy, and then week three and week four we'll see an uptick in production and quarterbacks. And I think that's probably just the new norm. And it's not only quarterbacks. It's really across the board, just sloppy play, penalties, drops, all these types of things.
Right.
It's really like the season doesn't officially start until like week three or four of this team. This is what they are. This is how good they are. We don't know much after the first couple weeks of the season anymore. It's very up in the air still.
Yeah, and when it comes to week one passing touchdown production, this is, you know, in the last 5 years, this is by far the lowest amount of passing touchdowns we saw in week one. And yeah, I agree with most of what you're saying, and I think that is a contributing factor. But also, I think we have seen like a transition. Like even the Chiefs run the ball, try to find a way to you know, bring a little bit of power, along with their finesse. Although I don't think they did that necessarily great in week one, but they were playing against the Ravens defense, who's always pretty stout. But like, there's more two high safety looks. There's just more high safeties in general. People are trying to limit the big play, and I think that we have, you know, over the past, I don't know, 5 to 7 years, I think a lot of quarterbacks have fallen into the habit of trying to make the big play whenever they possibly can, not living for another down. And I think the quarterbacks that check the ball down, make the right play consistently, are the ones who are just having success early in the season. Patrick Mahomes was good. Baker Mayfield did it at a very high level. Tua Tagovailoa does it at a very high level. Just keeps you on pace. Like, I just think that the amount of high safeties we're seeing, the more too high looks we're getting, the less production we're seeing from these quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because we've seen this shift in the NFL towards stopping the deep ball, limiting the big plays, and what comes with that is more run attempts and then more underneath throws. So touchdowns were down, but I think you already said it. The 300-yard passers, there was only two, so yardage was down in a big way. Yep. Also, what weeks of the NFL season are there only two 300-yard passers?
Well, what weeks are there 17 quarterbacks of the 32 that are under 200 yards? That's nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's insane. And another, and I can kind of tie it back to my other point as well of just less preparation. Offensively, there are so many intricacies. There's so many things that have to go right. Defensively, I'm not saying there aren't, because there are. There are a lot of different schemes. Sure. There are a lot of different ways to play. But what we're seeing more and more with less reps in the preseason is defenses are ahead to start the year.
Yep.
The defenses are more on schedule than the offenses are, because it's just easier to adapt. You don't need as much time. Play calls are a lot less than they are on the offensive side of the ball. Offensive play calls, as we all know, are pretty insane. And so when you've got younger guys in there, when you've got offensive linemen who really haven't hit much at all or gotten much live pass blocking or run blocking at all, it's just going to be sloppy, and the defense is going to have the advantage. And it really has been like the last 3 or 4 years we've kind of shifted more towards that, knowing, okay, week one is going to be pretty lackluster from a big play standpoint. Week two is not going to be far behind. The defenses are just ahead now early in the season.
Yep. Yep. I wonder how long it's going to last, though, this year. Because there was a point we broke through last year. But we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. But, Christian, I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again next week.
Yes, sir. See you back next week.
That is Christian Fowler at CFowlerBCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. And make sure you check out our podcast, On the Bluff Podcast. Releases every single Tuesday at noon, wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, full-length video version is on YouTube. Now we need to go ahead and hop into the Blitz when we return. We have a few stories to get to, so make sure that you stick around.
Get closer to the action with 92.9 FM ESPN on the free Odyssey app.
But if you can't catch it live, you know, when you're going running or doing something else, you can listen to Jason John on the app. You know, that's what I go
right
back and I
It is amazing. Sometimes people will say, man, I'm moving. I hate that I'm going to. I'm like, you don't have to not listen to us. Like, the internet exists on the app.
Sometimes say to me, they'll say, do you ever think about having a podcast? Someone said that. And usually it's a young person. So
right,
someone
right,
said
right,
that.
Right.
My nephew, my 20-year-old nephew said that to me. And I tried to explain to him that if I was to, quote-unquote, start a podcast tomorrow, I'd have 12 listeners as opposed to the tens of thousands, or hundreds of thousands, whatever it is that we already have here. Plus, by the way, this is also a podcast available and consumed just like you would any other podcast.
No doubt.
So in fact, I have a podcast, but also a radio show.
Listen back anytime using the Odyssey app's Rewind feature. Smart speakers, too. Just say, play 92.9 ESPN.
Your coworkers might annoy you, but we promise we won't. Download the free Odyssey app and you can listen to us at work while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Tune in late, you can rewind your favorite live shows to catch what you missed. And with chapters, easily jump to the topics that you care about most, like the latest updates from your team. Your sports talk, your way. The Odyssey app. Download it today.
Portions of today's program are pre-recorded.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds, which could be life-changing. I mean, you could put that money towards concert tickets for your daughter to see that singer who sings about painful breakups. And one song will inspire your little beauty to break up with that beast she's dating, Brian. Instead, she'll date someone who's nice and worthy of her love, not someone who addresses you and your spouse as, bro. And it's all because you could save money switching at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states.
Hi, welcome to Staples.
Hi, I hear Staples can print everything for my business.
Sure can.
And the quality is guaranteed?
Absolutely.
Plus, you'll beat any price quote. Is that right?
For sure.
How about this one?
We'll beat it.
Can you print menus, signs, and flyers?
Sure can.
How about blueprints?
No problem.
What about red prints?
Not a real thing.
What if they were?
We'd print them. And they'd look amazing.
Now at Staples, print more, save more. Up to $150 off your print purchase. Ends 11-2. Exclusions apply. Visit staples.com/print for offer details and staples.com/price match for in-store price match guarantee.
When people have a craving to explore new and traditional Asian cuisines, they head to P.F. Chang's, where scratch-made dishes come from the 2,000-year-old tradition of wok cooking. P.F. Chang's wanted to explore new possibilities for their website. They turned to AmericanEagle.com. AmericanEagle.com re-architected P.F. Chang's website, integrating integrating multiple third-party systems to create a unified digital experience. The results? Improved page speed and performance, personalized content based on users' location, intuitive online ordering, an increase in organic search visibility, and a 40% increase in new users. For scratch-made Asian cuisine, visit your local PF Chang's or go to pfchangs.com for website design, development, digital marketing, and hosting that produce efficiency, revenue, and results. Visit AmericanEagle.com. PF Chang's and AmericanEagle.com. Another example of the best businesses in the world. Turning to the best in the business for websites, go to AmericanEagle.com or call 877-WEB-NOW-1. That's 877-WEB-NOW-1.
Atlas Tube and the Zekelman campus is expanding. Join a growing team in our new advanced facility that's definitely not your average steel mill. Earn great pay, bonuses, and competitive benefits while supporting the future of American steel. We're now hiring skilled industrial electricians, mechanics, maintenance, and many more. Text STEEL to 20123 for more information. Again, that's STEEL, STEEL, to 20123. Or visit us at Zekelman.com/jobs. Zekelman, believe in what you build.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Feel is their appointed duty.
Robert Irwin Jewelers is the number one place to buy diamond engagement rings. And there's a lot of reasons that is the case. Get over there and make sure you take advantage of all the choices they have. They have a large, enormous collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. And they make custom designing your engagement ring easy and risk-free. And I think the biggest thing that really should ease your mind about Robert Irwin Jewelers and going to buy your diamond engagement ring from them is they have the mint to be guaranteed. You can buy your loose diamond and custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, and you have 365 days to return it. You can have it your way. You can bring in a drawing, a picture, and they will make that one-of-a-kind ring come to life. And they have free ring sizing for life. So if you gain weight, you lose weight, they can handle that for you. They have a free jewelry spa service for life. So, yeah, I mean, they can polish, they can buff it, ultrasonic cleaning, whatever you possibly need. They can keep all of that great jewelry that you buy from Robert Irwin Jewelers as shiny as the day that you bought it. And they have great payment options. Ask her now and pay later with financing options like 24-month deferred interest. Take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. They have 4 decades of experience. Howie and his team do a great job of getting you exactly what you need over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. But it doesn't have to just be a diamond engagement ring. You can celebrate a new job, a birthday, a new pet mom, a retirement, whatever it is, make sure you get over. 3 locations in South Haven, Bartlett, and the Diamond Showroom on Perkins Extended for Robert Irwin Jewelers, or you can go online at rijewelers.com. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers. Now, we do a little thing called the Blitz every single day, and today's no exception. Connor, hit it.
Now, the biggest stories.
Overloading the line.
A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
And the Blitz, of course, is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. Connor, what we got?
Former Memphis point guard Javon Quinterly has announced his retirement from basketball. He shared that he has made over 7 figures in NIL money, but then shared this message. To the majority, I will always be remembered as a failure. But while that may be the case in basketball, they say the greatest successes in life often emerge from the most difficult setbacks.
It kind of surprises me he's retiring. Can we start there? Like, it kind of surprises me because he could play overseas. He could play. I mean, he could still make money doing this thing, but he probably wants to go into his business ventures. I know he had a clothing line, and Oxbow had some shirts that he made some merchandise sales or commission off of. So, like, he has the ability and the reach to be good in business. So I guess that's what he wants to do right now. I will say, to call himself a failure and to say other people may view me as a failure, I don't know if anyone views him and his basketball life as a failure. Like, I know that there's passionate fan bases, Bama and Memphis in particular, that may have gotten rubbed the wrong way by him, feel like he failed in certain moments. I certainly felt like that last year at the University of Memphis. But to overwhelmingly say people view you as a failure is insane. I think you had failures along the way, but you also, let's think about it, were a 5-star recruit out of high school. You started the whole jelly thing You know, like you started a trend in basketball when you came out of high school. You were a sixth man of the year in the SEC. You've made, I don't know, seven-figure deals possible for yourself. You have a lot of money in the bank. So, yeah, there were certain failures. Didn't make the tournament at Memphis. Couldn't stay at Bama. They wanted to move off of you. Nate Oates certainly wanted to move off of you. You had failures along the way, but to say that most people ultimately chalk up his basketball career as a failure, I think that's pretty insane. There are levels to success. He reached a certain amount of success, but he couldn't exceed that. I feel like it's put himself in a little bit of a victim category, and I don't necessarily think he should have played it that way. But he's entitled to feel how he wants to feel, but I would not say in any way, shape, or form Javon Quinterly's basketball career was a failure.
To be honest, it made me a little sad to see.
I agree. It's sort
to
of
see
a,
that he views himself as a failure, because you are not defined by how your career may have ended or how the season may have ended at Memphis. It was a mess. It was absolutely a mess. But I don't think that means that his entire career was a failure. You just listed off all of the reasons it was not. To achieve the accomplishment of playing high level Division I basketball for a team that at one point was top 15, that's not a failure at all. You played at Alabama, you played at Memphis, you had
Villanova,
Villanova. You had some really big moments in your career. It wasn't a failure. It didn't end the way that you had wanted it to. You ultimately didn't achieve everything that you wanted to. But I don't think that in any way Javon Quinterly is a failure. He is walking out of college basketball with seven figures.
Yeah.
That is a success.
That's a success. Overwhelming success, in my opinion. It's just not. It doesn't have to do with the actual on-court play. He probably wanted to be an NBA player. Didn't quite achieve that. But what he said is most people view me as a failure. Like, I think you're projecting how you feel to a certain extent on others that have followed you throughout your career. I didn't really quite understand that. But, I think there are levels to success, and he reached a lot of success in his basketball career. I applaud him for it, but there were failures along the way. That does not mean we chalk up his entire career at the collegiate level as a failure, his entire career as a basketball player as a failure. I think we will remember him for certain things. Certainly at Bama, sixth man of the year, SEC, tournament. He was all SEC tournament at one point. He had some high moments here at Memphis, had a couple of buzzer beaters last year. So I think he will be remembered, but I don't necessarily think he's going to be remembered as what he thinks he's going to be remembered as, and that's a failure. There are levels of success. He just didn't reach what he wanted to reach.
I hope that in the future, Javon Quinterly can look back on his collegiate career with a little bit more fondness, because right now he's a little bit too close to it. And again, there were some moments this past season that were not very good on the court, and ultimately the season ended in a disappointment, but I don't think that means his entire career was a failure by any means.
Here's the thing. I had goals and aspirations coming out of college, having started 4 years, having started 50-some-odd games, to be an NFL player. Like, that was my goal and my aspiration. I didn't reach that. That doesn't mean that I look back at it as a failure. I achieved a lot of different things. A conference championship, an all-conference selection, first team. I was able to get into a position where I could play for my right to get into the NFL. I don't view my entire football career as a failure because of the one goal I wasn't able to achieve.
Right.
It's really hard to get to the top of the sport, and just because you don't does not mean that you failed. I just think it's an insane attitude to have. But maybe that type of aspiration, that type of goal-driven attitude will help him in his life after basketball. I certainly hope it does.
Panthers defensive tackle Derrick Brown suffered a meniscus injury that will require surgery. The surgery will determine the exact timeline, but I've got to ask you, how bad could this situation get this year with the Panthers?
I gotta be honest with you. I know it's week one and people don't want to overreact and make their intentions known to think that this team could potentially lose every game on their schedule. But based on a 47-10 loss and making Derek Carr look like he turned back the clock by 7 years, I'm sorry, this team looks like it could be an 0-17 team right now. I know that's ridiculous to say right now. Maybe they'll sneak one out. But I feel like you have to be very intentional as an NFL team to go win games. You have to take advantage of mistakes. But the problem is this Panthers team is the only team that seemingly is making as many mistakes as they were in week one. First play of the year for their offense was a pick from Bryce Young. Derrick Brown, who's I think their highest paid guy, 4 years, $96 million contract. He got out this offseason. He's probably the biggest redeeming quality of that entire team. He's likely going to be out for the rest of the season. They're probably not going to try to push him because they're paying him a lot of money. You made all these signings in the offseason on your O-line. Doesn't work out. They don't have a redeeming quality about themselves. Their quarterback's not very good. Their O-line's not very good. Their wide receiver room stinks. Their defense is going to be one of the worst in football. I hate to say it. I really think this team has the ability to be an 0-17 team. And I know we do this every year and we have these conversations, but when I look at this team, this is one of the worst teams we have seen in the past decade in the National Football League. And they have a rookie head coach. It's just a recipe for disaster. It's a bad franchise with bad players and bad management. And I think that's a recipe for 0-17. I know it's insane to say after week one, but I feel pretty strongly about this one.
Yeah, it's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. And I still can't help but think of the owner and the clown show that he is running and yep. how mad he gets at everybody every single time they mention how poor the team is run. He's the same owner, right, where that restaurant had the sign that said,
correct.
Please let somebody else make the draft pick this year. And he went in there touched a guy's hat and was all upset with it. It's like, hey, man, yep. I don't know. Maybe instead of being upset for
Tepper.
Signs, be upset that your team sucks and yep. is genuinely one of the worst teams in sports. It is one of the worst
Since
teams
he has
in
taken
sports.
Over, they have the worst record in the NFL. I think there's no coincidence about that. So I truly believe this team can be generationally bad. We will see how it looks a few weeks into the season. I feel bad for Bryce Young. I feel bad for some of the players on that roster right this second. But there's no hiding from how bad they are. They are miserable. They are the worst team in the NFL, and I think it could get, we could go back by the end of this season and talk about them being one of the worst teams in the 21st century. I truly believe that right now. I know some people are going to say I'm jumping the gun. I don't feel like I am, though.
It also feels like there's no path forward for them. They don't really have any sort of future. Yeah, they have Bryce Young.
They traded a lot of
sure.
it away to go get Bryce Young.
But that's all they got.
Yeah, and that didn't work out. You let the Bears get Caleb Williams. You'd probably, if I'm being honest, take Caleb Williams over Bryce Young if given the opportunity.
I would say
so. Both of them coming out of college.
I would say so.
Caleb Williams has he's taller, probably has a little more throwing ability, that type of thing. But you traded away a lot of your future assets to go get Bryce Young, but you didn't surround him with anything worthwhile, and he's going to struggle, and you may ruin his career. So this is just an abject failure from the top down, and I think it could only get worse from here.
The NFL is investigating yet another Deshaun Watson lawsuit. A Jane Doe in Houston alleges that Watson sexually assaulted her during what was supposed to be a dinner date at her apartment.
I mean, I doesn't surprise me. He had 25 of these not too long ago. I'm amazed. This is what amazes me about the entire Deshaun Watson story. Before all this hit the fan, before all this stuff came to be, well, how did we view him? How did you view him, Connor, for example? Did you view him as a nice guy previously? I viewed him as a good guy from his Clemson days through sort of the almost the end of the Texans days. But when all the stuff with the Texans hit the fan and you had all the 25 lawsuits, you had another one we know recently, it just his whole persona and personality, everything switched on a dime. It's wild to see someone in this position completely derail their career with something as nasty and ridiculous as this. And it just keeps coming. It won't stop. It won't stop. And for him, I think there are more important things than football right now, because he's not very good at football right now. I know that he just had, I think his father passed away or something like that. He had a couple of deaths in the family before week one. He said he wasn't using it as an excuse, but, you know, that was sort of talked about as a potential reason he played poorly in week one with the Browns against the Cowboys, losing 33-17. But if I'm the Browns, too, I would use this as a inflection point to try to get out of this contract and move on from Deshaun Watson. It's been a complete disaster, and he's a liability on the field and off the field. You just can't have this anymore in the NFL. There are some things that are worth, you know, pushing through. I don't think the sexual assault lawsuits at this point are worth pushing through if you are the Cleveland Browns. They need to move on.
You know, I don't think I really had a strong opinion of Deshaun Watson before all this came out. I don't think I really had an opinion on him at all as a person, and that's, to be quite honest, what you kind of want from your athletes in a lot of moments.
Right.
Like, but I don't really know anything about him other than he's good at football.
But here's the thing. He was a really highly rated recruit, went to Dabo.
No, like, I thought Dabo, he was usually one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. That was my opinion.
But like, for me, before all this hit, it was like he was sort of clean cut.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Well-spoken guy, like
a Russell Wilson variant.
Nothing to worry about. And then it's just like now, I he's a bad human being. I think that much is very clear.
Yeah,
where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't care if he settled with all these 26 now.
26.
But I don't care if he settled for all these things. Where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's a lot of fire here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I understand that his contract is what it is, but at some point, you have to just cut bait.
Yeah, and
just cut bait.
Well, doing what they did in the first place was insane. We can admit that.
Insane.
If they keep standing by him with more of these things coming out, it gets more and more insane. And you look more and more dumb as a franchise if you continue to stand by this guy. You can void the rest of this contract. You have the ability to do that if he continues to be a complete liability off the field, as he continues to be. So just move on with your life. Move on with everybody's life. Deshaun Watson should probably not be in the National Football League right now. And this is another example of why.
Gabe, do you hear that? Is that Tom Brady's music? Is that Tom Brady's music in the distance that I hear?
I don't know, maybe.
Or the Cleveland Browns?
What was wild to me, did you hear him week one?
He wasn't great.
People were being a little bit too much with Tom Brady.
It was the biggest thing that I noticed.
He doesn't know the pacing of the game.
He's got to figure out how to fill the space. There were a lot of very long pauses, and it's just, hey, Tom, this is when you're supposed to be talking.
His speaking pace is a little uncomfortable.
It was like his first day. If all of us went back and listened to our first days on radio,
exactly,
it was probably terrible.
I think people need to relax on him a tad bit, because I think it'll get better as the season goes.
I think it'll get better.
And he also, like, he was calling out a lot of the things that were happening to the Browns. He talked about Micah Parsons. Every time he brought up Micah Parsons' name, Micah Parsons was making a play. Every time he circled Micah Parsons was making
a play. He'll get more comfortable.
I think he'll get more comfortable, but it's just like, with any new job, new gig, you're going to be rusty at first. You're not, well, not even rusty. That's not even the way to put it, because he's never done it before.
Any first day,
you're just going to struggle because you don't know the ins and outs of the industry and the job. I think he'll get better as it goes along. But if it doesn't get better, hey, I may hear that Tom Brady music. But also, here's the other thing. I think even without Deshaun Watson getting his contract voided and moving on from the Cleveland Browns, should they think about Jameis Winston anyway? I think they should think about Jameis Winston anyway.
Yeah.
You saw Joe Flacco step in there and play really well, win comeback player of the year last year.
Well, that's Joe Flacco.
That's Flacco. That's an elite quarterback right there, huh? That's a Super Bowl winning quarterback right there. But yeah, you saw Joe Flacco do that. I would think about, based on what I saw from Deshaun Watson week one.
At the very least, it'll be entertaining.
Yeah.
Letting Jameis get in there and throw that thing around.
Confidence and throwing it downfield, whether it's a pick or not, that is fun to watch.
Did you see what he said about his last name? I don't even know if this is real.
What?
I think it was real. I think he went
on. Oh, no. Are we getting misinformation
recently?
Here?
It may be, but it's funny. It's harmless misinformation if it is.
Okay.
I think that he has a quote out there from recent that said, the first four letters of my last name spell out wins.
It
does. That is true, Jameis.
I'm sure he said that. Actually, never mind. That can't be fake news. That's got to be something he said. That's
got to
be something he said.
I'm almost positive he said that.
I'm almost 100% positive he said that.
Say it.
Yeah.
See, it's harmless. Harmless misinformation.
You're right. If it is misinformation,
a rare breed.
I don't think that's misinformation, though.
No.
Now that you've put it out there in the ether,
it's
I think
not
that
the
is
type
true.
Of misinformation
I think he said that.
That we're going to hear tonight is what you're saying.
Yes, correct. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. We'll come back and get to the rewind, wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.